Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins. Thank you for joining us today. We got a special program today. It's a live recording at our venue, the Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern, where we hold our public meetings on the third Tuesday of every month. And we had a special meeting this month. We got a special panel put together. It's about communication. So we have Lockwood Phillips from WTKF 107.1, and he is the host of Viewpoints, Youth Points, and the Y Factor, and he brought in some guests, and we're going to talk about communications and getting the word out. So please stay tuned here. Listen to the whole show. I think you're going to enjoy it, and please visit our sponsors and let them know that you heard about them here on CCTA Wake Up Call. Okay, if y'all are not familiar with us, you probably, if you listen to the radio show, you'll hear me, your host, say, welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm Rick Hopkins. We have Hal James with us, his lovely life, that's true too, wife, Rainer James, Mary Griswold, and Bob Griswold. Hal is chairman of CCTA. He is also chair of our vetting committee and chairman of our watchdog committee. And Rainer is chairman of our state legislative action committee. And at the other end of the room here, we have with us Lockwood Phillips from 107.1. WTKF, you probably recognize him from the Lockwood Phillips Viewpoints show, and he also has Youth Points, and there's one other one, Y Factor. So, Lockwood, if you would, take the mic down there and introduce your guest.
All right, thank you very much. Real quickly, the question was asked of me earlier this evening, and was also asked that I might make mention of it. It has to do with our former staffer, Rush Limbaugh, and the fact that we've lost that that program on our station. And part of that is a result of a disagreement between the syndicator and us. And it was the syndicator's privilege, and we respect it. But I want to make comment about the station in general, and then also it'll lead into conversations this evening. First, we carry the name First in Talk. WTKF was the first FM talk station in the state of North Carolina back in 1998. No FM station would ever consider being a talk station, and we were. And we looked forward, we looked down the line, and we realized there was a potential there. We were the first FM station in North Carolina to carry Rush Limbaugh. And we have greatly appreciated his long service to our station and to our community and to the state, and I think he does an excellent job. But at the same time, what is imperative here to recognize is that we do not rely on just one individual in our program or a lineup. We recognize the value of many voices. That's one of the reasons why we're pleased and proud to have Wake Up Call on our program, and we do appreciate that. And I talked to the to Rick and Hal often about this, and Rainer. My point is this. We're looking to broaden the voices that you hear. And you're going to hear them this evening, as a matter of fact. And I'm very proud of our commitment, and I will say that it's my commitment, towards the concept of a news talk format. And you're going to hear some conversations this evening that go beyond just an issue of media. And it's the whole topic of debate, dialogue, and conversation. And in fact, one in our party this evening, Trevor Brownlow, who I'll introduce in just a moment, attended a function in Duke, at Duke University and NC State this past weekend on the issue of political dialogue. The organization is called Leaders in political, leaders of political dialogue, leaders in, leaders of, the four, leaders for political dialogue, I'm sorry. And we have the, is Nicole one of the officers of the organization? Co-chair, Nicole Kiprilov, is a regular participant in our Thursday evening program called The Y Factor. Final analysis, and then we'll get into the conversation. The analysis is this. We have got to open the door, and we've got to open our thoughts to new thoughts and new voices. And that's one of the reasons why we have the Y Factor, one of the reasons why we have Youth Points, as a matter of fact. That's another program that I'm greatly proud of. And every Monday evening, I have a group of high school students to talk to. And I'm there to listen, not to talk to them. I entice them to or solicit from them their observations and their comments. I'll challenge them, but the point of the matter is I want to hear what they're thinking, and I think we need to hear what they're thinking because they're experiencing a different world than what we experienced growing up. And just to digress for a moment, I had a high schooler last year look at me and say that his generation was the most frightened generation. And I found that really shocking. But reviewing what he said and the reason for his comment related to all the shootings we've experienced, all the bombings we've experienced, we've been at war for going on 18 years, I had to admit, I think he has something there. And I would never have considered it if I hadn't had that evening's conversation. So there are thoughts, there are disagreements, there are concepts out there that we need to hear and to incorporate in our conversations. And you're going to hear from our panel this evening. Let me start with our lady. We have Lindy Robinson. Some of you know her, and we may get into a conversation on it, but I do not want to get too heavy in the conversation. She was the former director of the Carter County Board of Elections. And the conversation, of course, might transpire over to what's taking place in the 9th Congressional District of North Carolina, which, as you know, right now has not been certified, and based on the information I received this evening, probably will not be certified and might require a special election. So be aware of that. She is now in the area of political support. She was field director for Congressman Walter Jones. She also provides field support for other elected officials, Norm Sanderson and Pat McElrath, to name two. Sitting next to her, Joey Sisk. Joey is a UNC graduate. He's employed with a national logistics company. He's a member of the Y Factor. And quite frankly, at times, pushes us from a perspective of a more liberal argument. But I really appreciate his participation. And next to him, Trevor Brownlow, a UNC graduate, also. He spent a year at Duke, but he took a gap year, and he's an entrepreneur, and he started a company in Africa. So he's a grad. He just recently graduated from Chapel Hill, where he got a degree in communications, and was also, as I mentioned a moment ago, in attendance at a function at Duke University and NC State, and that's Leaders for Political Dialogue. So with that as our introduction, let me just tell you what we hope to accomplish this evening. We're going to chat about the issue of communications, media, and politics. But I also want to stress the word communications. I'm going to lead with a few questions. We may get into some conversations, cross conversations, and then I'll move on to another item, another concept. But I do want to just commend to you, and we will open the floor for conversations briefly. Do not want to take all of your evening. I want to be sensitive to that. But in the process, we'd like you to think about what we're talking about is not just the information, but literally the source of that information and the impact that the source sometimes has on the content, on the information itself. So with that said, Let me start with a conversation, and I'm going to sit down and I'll begin the questions with our panel. And I'm going to start with Lindy Robinson in light of her experience with political campaigns. The issue of, and with this, Lindy, I'm going to, okay, you've got a mic. The question is, we're looking now at a world where there are a variety of sources of information. The internet, you've got print, you've got TV, you have billboard, you have road signs. My question to you is, have we scattered our sources of information so much that now, as you are thinking of campaigns, you have to identify not only the source, but who will be, in the case of road signs, who will be traveling on those roads? Where, what is it that's necessary now in the field of communications in the political arena?
Well, I think you do have to look at each campaign differently. You have to see who your target audience is going to be. There are some people who will tell you that yard signs are just vital to a campaign. Mm-hmm. Other consultants will tell you that they don't want to spend any money on yard signs because they're just not effective. We're having to look more at social media platforms because that's where young people are going for their information. Billboards are becoming much more popular. So there are a lot of things that I see changing, again, from going from the traditional ways of yard signs and that sort of thing to get your message out. Print, unfortunately, is kind of going away now as far as those types of ads. We're doing more digital ads, again, reaching people through radio ads. TV ads are still a good way to do that. But one of the things, again, is print is just going away as far as campaign ads we're seeing.
And by the way, that's painful because I'm also in the print business, too.
I know,
so thank
I'm
you very
so
much,
sorry.
Lindy. Who invited you? But anyhow, back to the issue. This goes to the concept of trust in the source of information. Let me start with you on this one, Trevor, and then I'm going to move to you on this one, Joey. What about the topic of trust? Is there, in your capacity in communications, is there an issue here where the information is in some way colored or impacted by the means of which it is distributed?
Absolutely. Over the past 50 years, we've seen media outlets increasingly demonstrate partisan propensities and affiliations, especially when the Fairness Doctrine was rescinded in 1991. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was introduced in 46, so we saw the rise of more partisan outlets on television and radio. And also just with the digital age, we are witnessing a proliferation of media outlets, and what's happening is media fragmentation. And to contend with media fragmentation, outlets have to become increasingly sensationalized and compete for scarce attention. There's a term for this called the attention economy.
Okay.
And that's how that's what's characterizing this new age of journalism. In terms of media trust, I have here a report from the University of Oxford, Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism, and they currently place in the United States a trust level of 34% in news overall, and that's down 4% from last year.
Okay, wait a second. 34% trust?
34%, and that's from the University of Oxford's Reuters Institute.
Okay, that's 34% trust in what
news overall?
Overall,
so just sort of an overall impression.
That's electronic. That's print.
That includes all formats.
And, all formats.
It's 13% trust in news gleaned from social media.
All right. Let me go ahead, Al.
Well, I'm a relative new person to using a cell phone very much, but. I've started getting a lot of tweets and a lot of information coming up, news for today and news for tomorrow and all that kind of thing that's coming through from all different sources. And a lot of times I don't agree with what's being sent to me. And so when you get on the issue of trust, you know, it's pretty hard for me to tell what to trust. It really is. So I'd like to hear you all comment on that, if you would.
Joey, would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, I think with the increase in news gotten from social media, social media news tends to come more from individuals. For instance, you're following somebody's Twitter feed, you're getting what seems to be news from them as a person. Somebody that you're friends with posts an article. You're getting information from an individual, and your trust in the information is going to depend on your trust in the individual. Whereas traditional news, it depends on your trust in an institution, not simply the person who's relaying the news. And you can always view an institution as especially one that relies upon outside money, as having a different agenda or another influence that would undermine their authenticity. So.
Okay, Mary?
We have more news sources, but we're also in a position where many of our news sources are controlled by about five organizations. So we may have many more news outlets, but do we really have in our major news outlets any variety of opinion?
Okay, Trevor, your thoughts on that?
Right, I mean, many of you are probably familiar with Sinclair Media Group. They own over 200 television stations in the United States.
They were competing for the Tribune broadcast group. Tribune, of course, is Chicago Tribune, and they were required not to, well, basically they were forced out of the bidding for it. Go ahead.
So as the ownership of media becomes increasingly consolidated, you can more easily spread an agenda, whatever that agenda might be. Some thoughts there.
Bob?
Well, I was going to add that, again, with the 24-hour news cycle, and again, repeating it every hour, nothing is going in depth. As you said, it's going to be a sensationalism. It's going to be a headline. It won't dig into what is the story behind the story.
All right, let's go to that with Joey's comment a few moments ago, and we're going to get back to you here in a moment, Lindy. Joey, to you on this one. The fact that we have all these multiple sources, but to your point a few moments ago, that so many of these sources are picked up by individuals and then rebroadcast, retweeted, repurposed, if you will, does that in any way refine the information and broaden its benefit to the eventual recipient?
Yeah, I think that getting news through social media from individuals outside of traditional media establishment makes it more authentic and less likely to be affected by things like monetary influence or corporate influence. I think I'm very optimistic about the direction that media is going. Now, you do have the issue, though, if you have the news of individuals having to be filtered through a platform like Twitter, mm-hmm. then what amount of influence can Twitter or Facebook, for instance, exert on the news?
Algorithms.
And what can they do? Well, what can they do legally, and what are they going to do if they view certain political perspectives as being not as good as others, and they view themselves as having a moral imperative to silence certain people?
And this would be the creation of algorithms, sort of thing. Bob?
I was going to add, when you're dealing with Facebook or whatever else, how many of those sources are friendly sources because they agree with your viewpoint? And how often do we, I mean, I'm never going to be a friend of the New York Times, but I think I need to pick up the New York Times periodically and find that other position.
Okay, let me go to you on this one, Lindy. Lindy Robinson, of course, with us, and your experience. The fact that you have, and you challenged the print side of this, but the fact that you do have a vast majority of the news that is generated in the digital arena has as its initial source the print. Washington Post, New York Times, Miami Herald, Charlotte Observer, News Observer, and yes, the Carteret County News Times. I digress. A famous letter was written to the Carteret County News Times, and in it, the letter writer noted how successful the then President Obama had been in relationship to some of his social and political programs, and commented about, for example, his gun control, as you pointed out a few moments ago, Rainer, and how Chicago was a safe city to live in because they have some of the most safe, some of the most stringent gun laws, and went on and on and on. And as I was myself reading the letter to the editor, I'm going, shaking my head, okay, and another way out there far left writer. And concluded with the fact that, in a nutshell, anyone who was born by cesarean was not a naturally born citizen and therefore could not be president of the United States. Needless to say, when I read that, I realized that my left leg was a lot longer than my right, and I had to draw it all the way back. It got picked up, and it was carried all over the country. And we were getting all sorts of letters aggrieved about the fact that we had allowed such a letter to the editor to appear, and including Rush Limbaugh, who mentioned the letter. And it really disturbed me that at the conclusion, Rush said, I don't know if this person is serious or not. And I thought to myself, the loss of irony and sarcasm, what a shame that the public cannot make fun of something that was intended to be just really outrageous. And you've got to give credit to the writer. By the way, both my daughters were delivered by cesarean, so they will never be president of the United States. But this is the sort of thing. Lindy, to you, I apologize for that digression. The fact that much of what is covered in the news field does come predominantly from the print side, but we'll also give credit begrudgingly to some TV stations, but generally that's it for on-the-scene political coverage. Mm-hmm. Does that in any way influence how you, when you're planning a campaign, how you're going to promote that message? Because you have to, at some point, give its attribution, its source.
Well, you do, because you obviously want your campaign to get the most bang for its buck. So you're looking to see where that's going to happen.
Let me interrupt. Okay. So if, in fact, there's a report that comes from the New York Times, as Bob was just mentioning a moment ago, that's very supportive of your candidate, would that give you more weight than if it came from a blog or a Facebook posting?
I think that would depend on whom you ask, because some people, the minute you say Facebook or blog, they have no confidence in that at all because they don't know who the blogger is. They automatically have a block with that. I think there are some people, if it's, whatever the publication is, depending on their reputation, sure, then they're automatically going to go that way and think that's what they should listen to, and that's an accurate source. But one thing I did want to point out to Bob's point, I think it's great that you say that you may not agree with their opinion, but you feel like there's things there that you need to see and read. I think that's something that people do, is they do have a block and they're not open to looking at other sources because they feel like that's not what they're interested in hearing about. So how can you know what the other side is saying or what the other opinion is to even be able to come and talk with someone about your position or why you have the position or opinion you do if you haven't read from other sources? So I commend you for going places to do that.
Okay. Let me interrupt you, if you don't mind, Lockwood. We really need to take a break here to hear from our sponsors, so
all right,
we'll do that, and we'll come right back and continue this conversation.
The CCTA truly appreciates their sponsors because their support makes it possible for Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association to bring all of you Wake Up Call every Sunday. Those sponsors include Professional Auto Services on Country Club Road in New Bern, Gladys Sussell, Wellness Educator and Nutrition Consultant, Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend. Other great supporters are RightWingGranny.com with a unique perspective on the news, B&J Seafood on US 70 in New Bern, the North Carolina Fisheries Association, Baldwin Transmission and Auto Repair on Highway 17 South in New Bern. Also, the County Compass, serving Pamlico, Beaufort, Craven, and Carteret counties, Dr. J. Singleton, Moore's Old Time Barbecue. Tune in for the CCTA Wake Up Call every Sunday on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. This today's guest is Lockwood Phillips, and a panel of his Youth Points.
Y Factor.
And Y Factor.
And let me just very quickly run through that list again.
Okay.
We have Lindy Robinson, who is formerly with the Carter County Board of Elections. She was the director. She's now, of course, a political field director. She's in the politics. She stayed in politics. We have next to her Joey Sisk. He's a UNC graduate employed with a national logistics company. Area of expertise is, in fact, the internet. Am I doing okay on that one, Joey? I'm giving you...
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. And then Trevor Brownlow, UNC graduate, and also, his area of expertise, communications. I want to go back. Rainer, you asked a question a moment ago.
Yeah, I was thinking about what Lindy was saying about choosing which outlet would be more valuable, what Bob was saying about occasionally looking at the New York Times or something else that makes his blood pressure go up. And my background is sales. And I think what we're all trying to do is sell a candidate, sell an idea, sell a philosophy of government. We're really in the business of selling something. In sales, there's the notion that unless you are vulnerable to being sold, you can't sell. You have to listen with a careful, evaluative ear and be able to be persuasive. And you have to be open enough that the other person, if their ideas are better, can sell you. I think we've lost the ability to talk to each other and share ideas and make ourselves vulnerable to the other point of view.
Okay, let me ask Lindy for a quick response to that because I want to take it over to Trevor here in a moment. Lindy?
Well, I totally agree with that. I think communication, just what we said starting off, is the key to everything that we're trying to do, whether we're trying to get our candidate elected, whether we're trying to convince someone, you know, why we have the political position that we have. If we're not willing to listen and communicate and have dialogue, then we're not going to solve that problem. So I totally agree with that.
Trevor, you attended the Leadership for Political Dialogue, right?
Leaders for Political Dialogue.
Okay. That is part of that. Was that part of the conversation this weekend?
That's the central precept of this organization.
Yeah.
So Leaders for Political Dialogue is a consortium of Triangle Area universities, including Duke, UNC, NC State, and NC Central. Actually, in Meredith, too. And the goal is to address this issue of political polarization occurring in the United States. If you look at the data, our two parties are at a split that's wider than ever before. Having civil discourse is increasingly difficult. Reaching across the aisle and engaging with the ideas that undergird their position, it's difficult. And so what they did was they brought in a number of experts working on this issue, representatives from the Carrboro organization, a Carrboro organization focusing on conflict mediation. He's a trained facilitator. They also brought in representatives from Living Room Conversations and Better Angels, which are two organizations working on facilitating conversations across party lines and restoring that sense of Americanness that we should, you know, to have civil discourse together. I think that's the ultimate American ideal, and we're losing touch with that.
Why are we losing touch with that?
In part because of, I think, the way we consume news. I think when we can self-select a diet of media that is consistent with our viewpoints, it's easier to become a sort of protected by this echo chamber or ideological silo. And so we have to make a conscious effort to engage with sources that don't necessarily align with our personal viewpoints. And even beyond that, engage with people whose ideas don't necessarily align with our own.
Joey?
Yeah, I totally agree with Trevor. I think that one thing that the access to information, and specifically through social media, has done is it's allowed each, if you view America split between two political sides, it's allowed each side to see just enough of the other side to assume to know everything about them and to operate off of stereotypes. I think what's happened is, for instance, liberals look at conservatives and from the outset of a conversation, they think, I know who this person is, I know everything they believe, and I'm obligated to be hostile based on how I perceive them. And the same, it works for both sides. So I think that it's social media and broader information has, yeah, given us a little bit, but not enough towards a constructive conversation.
Okay, Mary, I see you raising your hand, and we've got to talk about a blog you wrote. And it was related to the word isms, which applies to what Joey just said.
Yes.
Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
But I just wanted to ask a question. We know from what we've read that there's a certain amount of censorship going on in Facebook and Twitter. How does that impact the polarization? That's an honest question. I don't know the answer.
That goes back to the disagreement I have with the concept that social media is a free form environment. It's not. This is my and frankly we've seen stories of this just recently. Google, Facebook,
Twitter.
Yahoo, Twitter, you name them, have all established a variety of algorithms. I use that. I love that term.
It's a polite word for censorship.
Censorship. That's correct. And it is happening, and it carries with it. And Joey touched on it a few minutes ago. The topic of the moral imperative. If in fact the news creates a situation that becomes out of control, who's responsible? And so, in essence, the controllers of the product have a sense of, maybe a sense of guilt or a sense of accountability on it. But then again, there are no rules for their form of accountability. Joey, am I?
I was going to say specifically is how it increases polarization. I would say mostly that it erodes trust. So you're already speaking about Facebook and the perspectives you see as being less trustworthy, and you trust them less as a corporate entity, and it feeds into a larger distrust of institutions, specifically media institutions, as far as having a liberal bias. But I think the act of censorship is also a result or a symptom of polarization, because it's to the point where Facebook is doing this from the position of viewing certain political viewpoints as being harmful or destructive. And without polarization, you don't really have one side viewing the other side as being necessarily harmful simply because they hold a different perspective.
Okay, before we go any further, I think, Rick, you've got something?
Yeah, I'd like to jump back a little bit to where they were talking about the groups on the college campuses. And to how you started to show out talking about campaigning, to what extent does the groups on college campus affect the campaigning, plus all the movements that are going on there, like the walk away movement. There's a number of things that have started, I believe, on college campuses and have had a great effect on this past election. And then for the third thing, you're talking about Facebook and Twitter, social media censorship. What about the censorship that these groups experience on campus when they invite certain speakers in? If they are of a conservative ilk, for instance, there's demonstrations, sometimes violence erupts.
I'm going to
broaden that question with Lindy in a moment, but Trevor, would you answer that for a quick second here?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, you might have seen where Ben Shapiro was trying to give a talk at UC Berkeley, and they just about made it impossible for him, and they went so far as to compromise his safety, which is completely unacceptable, and that is not going to help anybody move forward and facilitate empathy and understanding. Instances like that, I think, are disgraceful and should be combated everywhere possible.
Okay, I want to go to another story on that one, Rick, and I want to switch the tables, if you will, with Lindy. And we will talk about this organization without naming it. But Lindy, there are organizations that themselves have chosen not to hear ulterior perspectives, have they not? And you know of we know of a specific organization that shall remain nameless, but if you will.
Correct. This goes back to my time when I was at the Board of Elections, and we had a political group, and they would only allow speakers to come in if they were registered the same as their group. So they wouldn't allow even an unaffiliated person to come in and speak to their group. And at the time, of course, I was working as the director there, so even though I had my own personal opinions, I was nonpartisan. And I felt like it was such a loss on their part to not be willing to have someone come in and at least address their group. And certainly they lost out on the opportunity to have dialogue with that person on the points that maybe they did disagree. So I felt like it was, you know, a loss on both sides by doing that.
And then to broaden that question to Joey and Trevor on this one, the divide between the youth and, we'll use the baby boomers predominantly, is there a means to develop a bridge of communications, or are the perspectives and perceptions, Joey, so significant that there won't be an opportunity to have this dialogue?
Do you mean between generations?
Between generations, yes.
Oh, well.
And particularly the college generation, and I'll use the college, but that youth market, and which, by the way, let me digress here for a moment. Trevor, what was the numbers of voters in the youth voters? How did that, you had a target there?
In the 2018 midterms?
Yes.
31%, which is the highest number in 20 years.
Okay. All right. Back to you, Joey.
I think that between generations, the same ideological, the same principal arguments and conversations are occurring. What I would worry about is that the vocabulary might be different, or the ways that certain ideas are interpreted.
Help me out with the vocabulary being different.
Okay, an example on differences in vocabulary. The conversation between nationalism versus patriotism, and people discussing, well, is nationalism good or bad? What's its relationship to patriotism? And the conversation gets derailed when people actually have different definitions of the words they're discussing. So, and I think that the definitions of words, the kind of the structure for having a conversation, that can vary a lot between generations. So I would worry about that in intergenerational dialogue. But outside of that, I think it's a lot of the same conversations happening over and over again. Like conversations about free speech, about what's true, what's right. I think that really crosses generations.
But again, isn't media responsible for driving a lot of that? Because some of the terms are being changed by media. Revisionist history, those things are.
But is it media that's changing that, Rick, or is it the users of the media? And I'm going to ask you to do me a favor, if you can. Would you play that first segment of Dan Gaynor? And just as you bring that up, Dan Gaynor is a guest of mine every Friday evening with Newsbusters. And he has some interesting observations, if we can play this. We have just seen what the internet has done. It's polarized the conversation to such a degree that there is no trust. It's kind of an age-old question I've been asking you now these many years. Will we ever get back to the point where there's trust and integrity?
Well, there wasn't trust before.
Whoa.
So I'm going to dispute that the internet has done it. But the internet's a tool. It's
it's like saying, it's repeating the liberal gun argument and saying that guns jump off the shelf and shoot people. Mm-hmm. The internet is a tool we have all used, and to a large extent, maybe all misuse. And I say all, I'll include myself in that. I mean, we use it instead of it being a tool of unity, it's a tool of division. Person A says they believe something, person B criticizes them. Person B takes offense so much that they criticize person C as well, and it escalates, and it's become, we were polarized.
All right, that is Dan Gaynor, and that was a conversation we had last Friday, and it was, quite frankly, a gift. I knew that we were doing this program this Tuesday, but we just got off on that, and I was stunned that with his observation. Bob?
I wanted to add another factor. If anybody looks at, quote, comedy today versus comedy 20, 30 years ago, comedy, the best of comedy always has a grain of truth in it. And most of the comedy today that I don't necessarily watch is it has to have an insult to it in today's comedy world. And I guess a question is, on campus especially, when you're just having dialogues with other people, how many have to get in the first zing?
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense, because if you're having any kind of conversation with somebody and you're trying to assert your opinion or you're trying to assert yourself as being dominant, then insulting the other person is always going to be a good means of accomplishing that. But it's never going to strengthen the quality of somebody's idea. So you may win, that's where you may win some of an audience, but you're not going to win people who are concentrating on, and you're not going to win lasting converts on the strength of your ideas by insulting somebody. But you may very well appear to win an argument.
Okay, Mary.
I want to go back to something you started with when you talked about the millennial talking about fear. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of been sitting on that for a while. Because of the news media, because of the 24-hour news cycle, and the combination of things in our society where terrifying events have come closer to home. I mean, I'm part of the generation that hid under their desks because of nuclear attack. I mean, hiding under your desk in a nuclear attack is kind of ridiculous, but that's what we did, and we were scared. But we didn't have school shootings, and we didn't have a school shooting that was played on the media for 3 days after it happened. And I think the media has impacted that also.
To the degree that, and I'm stepping in on the conversation because it's really the panel's job, but to the degree, to Bob's comment earlier, he's mentioned it, the 24-hour news cycle. Now it's a one-hour news cycle. We have the creation of a concept that is relatively new to this multiple generations, copycat events, copycat killers, copycat bombers, copycat. So it comes down to something that has been a concern of mine for quite some time, and I mentioned it recently in a conversation with you all, and that is the concept of celebrity. There is a commitment now, a willingness out of emotional stress, whatever, that folks are willing to commit the most heinous events just for, was it Andy Warhol who said 15 seconds or 15 minutes? 15 minutes of fame. For 15 minutes of fame, and that's become their traction. The problem is that we have, and let me throw this one at you on this one, Lindy. We've gotten consumed by it. We've been, it's almost like a vacuum. It sucked us into the concern where we would watch the 24-hour news cycle. Even though it was really nothing new, when CNN first introduced itself to the All News Network, I mean, every 30 minutes, it was the same news story. They may periodically change one or two words in it, but yet people's eyeballs were glued to it. It became a form of entertainment, primarily a form of entertainment. So, Lindy?
Well, as you're saying that, that's the word that came to my mind was entertainment. And I think that's a lot of what the problem is when we go back to trust, is we're watching some of these shows and that it appears to be more entertainment than actually what we think is news. But I also wonder myself, as we watch the same things over and over, if we desensitize ourselves by seeing those things played for days and days, and then the next time we see it, we don't react to it the same way that we did when we saw it the first time. And I see that with other people. I see it with my candidates as I do some of their social media. I'm noticing that people who normally would not have come and said the things that they're willing to say in public now think that's okay to do that. And as they do it, other people join in, and it's kind of like wanting to be that celebrity there too. They want to see just how outrageous they can be, or, you know, how ugly they can be to get their point across. So, you know, I don't know that that's related to the 24-hour cycle, but again, I kind of think that is the desensitized way that we have come to deal with those types of things.
Now to you on this one, Joey, the concept of the age divide, the generation divide, we've seen this, of course, in modern technology. We've seen the development of, if you will, memes, the whole concept of creating a narrative and seeing how fast it'll flow, more out of just experiment than probably out of absolute passion and emotion. My question to you is there anything that would divide the younger generation, I've got to say you and Trevor, than do you see it differently than, for example, the assemblage here?
I think I'll bring it back to the issue of entertainment, because Walter Cronkite, and when you had news back when, I'll just say, it was you had news very much separated from what you would consider entertainment, like scripted television, sports, whatever was put on television for entertainment. Now, if you want to reach people with news material, there's so many options for entertainment that really the best way to do it would be to incorporate it into something that is entertaining. A lot of the people I know, they get news in a roundabout way from listening to podcasts a lot, which aren't, their primary motivation is not to transmit the news, it is to entertain people, but it makes news material a lot more personable and a lot more palatable to people.
Interesting observation. Al?
Yeah, a little while ago, Joey expressed optimism about the direction that media was going. And I started thinking about, well, what's making me feel optimistic, because I agree that there's some hope. One of the things is that there seems to be a surge in nationalism and patriotism. There seems to me that there's a real surge in people wanting to go back to our constitutional form of government, our republic form of government. And I was wondering, now these are the kind of things that make me feel positive, and I wonder what makes Joey feel positive, because I'm not sure we're on the same track on that. And I was,
well, now that you use that term, nationalism.
No, define your terms.
Well, I'm talking about anti-globalism. Does that help?
Well, no, I think if you have a freer media with more ideas being expressed more honestly, then the ideas that are quality and are the best are going to thrive naturally. People are going to embrace them, and they're going to express them. And I think patriotism, I'm assuming nationalism as you're defining it, and values expressed in the Constitution and the freedom granted by the Constitution are very positive things that people don't take lightly, regardless of generation.
This goes back, though, to Lindy's experience, where there was a hesitancy to consider alternative thoughts, alternative opinions. I mean, it's a two-way street, is it not, Lindy?
It should be. It really should be a two-way street, because, again, sometimes people surround themselves only with people who have the same opinion that they do, and they're just repeating or parroting what they've heard. They can't defend their own argument, and certainly if they haven't exposed themselves to the other side to listen to that argument, I would think it would be hard to really feel good about your position.
And going to you on that, Rainer, being in the sales.
Yeah.
You have to offer an alternative. You said someone open to the concept. Mm-hmm. But at the same time in sales, do you not also point out to an individual something they hadn't considered? And therefore, it's, if you will, success of the better idea.
It's always from the perspective of the person's enlightened self-interest, mm-hmm. and you need to show them how whatever it is, whether it be an idea or an object or whatever, is aligned with their enlightened self.
We're looking at two items, the message and the means of delivery of that message. And I go back, I'm going to bring it all the way back to that at the outset, with the intent of probably bringing it to a close. But when we're looking at the delivery system of the message, not the message itself, but the delivery system, does that influence the expectation on the part of the recipient? I'll look to you on that one, Trevor. In other words, well, I'm going to use as an example. Huffington Post, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, yes.
Talking to our teenagers last evening, and they are now seniors, juniors and seniors in high school, and they said that they had seen Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer when they were children, well, if they are, still are, but when they were much younger, and they loved the story. After the story broke from the Huffington Post, and I'm not sure if, I'm assuming that everyone knows about that, this, basically, someone in the Huffington Post decided to pick apart the imagery used in the storyline, claymation as it's called, and noted the bullying and all these other issues. These same students who originally saw Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and understood it at the time for its overall message that if someone perseveres, they can overcome great odds. A parent that doesn't love them, apparently, a coach that was pretty abusive to them, and friends. And so, of course, we know the storyline that Rudolph is accepted and becomes a leader. But these same teenagers picked apart that same program, and it was a little stunning. And so, all of a sudden, the message, which stayed the same for all intents and purposes, the perception changed from the delivery source, in this case, Huffington Post, and a variety of Facebook postings, I might add. So, I go to you on this one, Trevor. Does the fact that it's delivered by a blue pipe rather than a yellow pipe actually influence the expectation of the recipient of that information?
If I'm understanding you correctly, I'll try to respond in this way. I think that deriving our news from different sources preconditions our expectations on the type of message we're going to receive. And actually, a media scholar named Marshall McLuhan said the medium is the message.
Right.
It's a provocative and confusing statement, but I think it in part reflects how our perceptions can vary across these different avenues of news delivery.
All right, before I go to the questions, Joey, your thoughts on that?
I think it's good for people to view something from as many perspectives as they can, as many different ways as they can. The quality of the perspective, the quality of the viewing, the analysis, if it's worthy of analysis, is going to determine if it's accepted as being true. I don't think nobody's perspective should be threatened by other perspectives unless there is an authority behind them that would extinguish them, or your perspective isn't sort of up to snuff, I guess.
Okay, before I get to Lindy on that same question, but here's the point. If I'm used to receiving the information from a certain source, and let's take Breitbart or Jones.
InfoWars.
InfoWars. Right, help me out, the name of the...
Alex Jones.
Alex Jones, InfoWars. Extremely, aggressive, very right wing. Maybe right wingers probably don't want to accept that connection. But Alex Jones has an audience that is already predisposed to a conclusion. I'm picking on a right-wing publication. The same with Huffington Post. I picked on that. A very left-wing. People have a predisposition that what comes from the Huffington Post, even if it's the same information they would get from the Washington Post or any other organization, they're predisposed to believe everything that they read in the Huffington Post or InfoWars, using two extremes. Is there a way to open the door to those recipients to think about alternative sources, let alone alternative thoughts?
Independent thought.
Excuse me?
Independent thought.
Independent thought,
because
yes.
I think a lot of is following the crowd,
exactly.
You know?
Yep.
Because everybody else over here is watching this late night comedy show and getting their news from it. That's where mine's going to come from.
I would say the onus is on somebody like Alex Jones. I would say that if he does not bring material that surprises his viewers or that challenges his viewers, then he is inevitably going to suffer. He's not going to be embraced by people who want quality ideas that hold up to alternative viewpoints.
But we're seeing now the consolidation of so many people and we've used the term several times, polarization. How do you depolarize those people? How do you make them more open? How do you entice them to be more open? I'm going to go to you on this one, Lindy, because this is one of your capacities as a political consultant.
Well, as I'm listening to what people are saying, it reminds me of something someone told me when I was at the Board of Elections, which just was on somebody personally, on their self. If you like someone, you're open to listening to what they have to say, and you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, and you want to believe them. If you don't like them, you automatically are just suspecting what they say, you're doubting it, you're wondering if you should trust it. I think it's the same thing with the sources. I think we go to the sources that we trust because they're saying what we need and want to hear, and therefore we trust them. When we go to the others, we don't have that same open mind. So I think it goes back to self somewhat, that we have to be willing to do the research and find out if they're trustworthy sources and if we're open to listening to that.
Bob?
I was going to relate your Carteret Times letter and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And if we went to a university right now and went to a music study course, we could disassemble West Side Story, South Pacific, and all those, and just really, really crucify them.
And yet, really and truly, South Pacific, for example, was a musical focused on bigotry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was received, and it had an influence, but it was not an in-your-face kind of event. Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today's program. I hope you enjoyed this special event, and please come back and visit us next Sunday.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com. The CCTA truly appreciates their sponsors because their support makes it possible for Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association to bring all of you Wake Up Call every Sunday. Those sponsors include Professional Auto Services on Country Club Road in New Bern, Gladys Sussell, Wellness Educator and Nutrition Consultant, Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend. Other great supporters are RightWingGranny.com with a unique perspective on the news, B&J Seafood on US 70 in New Bern, the North Carolina Fisheries Association, Baldwin Transmission and Auto Repair on Highway 17 South in New Bern, also the County Compass, serving Pamlico, Beaufort, Craven, and Carteret counties, Dr. J. Singleton, Moore's Old Time Barbecue. Tune in for the CCTA Wake Up Call every Sunday on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240.